podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Okay, los. Hello, so just 2 weeks to go. We break the habit of a season and pod before the game week is over. Sorry, but it's unavoidable this week due to work commitments. So we're going to aim for something more forecasty, you know, rather than tied down to current events, just to make sure we're not too tied into what's going on. We are Who Got the Assist. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at WGTA_FPL. Nick's at WGTA_Nick. And Anthony's at FPL Stag. We're also on Instagram, WGTA.FPL. And you can probably tell from me doing that, that sadly there's no Nick tonight due to family commitments. But we've drafted in, you know, the best of the best, the nicest, the funniest punter in FPL Twitter, and Adam Pritchard, basically the only person who's available, who you can find at 35Who to join us for this one today. You know, we're very grateful to Adam for finding the time to come in for Nick at very short notice. So yeah, brilliant to have you on as always, Adam.
Thanks, Tom, for the very, very kind intro. I'll have you know I cleared my very hectic social calendar just to be here for you guys. You know, I had all sorts of plans for, what is it, a Tuesday evening. But yeah, no, great to be on.
Yeah.
Sorry, just choked.
Just by your very presence, Adam, you just make Anthony just collapse into hysterics. I don't even know. He's not said anything. I mean, is it just the poise? Is it just the diction? Is it just the delivery, Anthony? I don't know what it is.
I don't know. I just sorry.
He's laughing at the tash, isn't he? Really? I think we both know that.
Yeah, it is an interesting tash. I'm not going to get into it too much because we're all sporting interesting tashes due to probably lockdown. But I feel like you've properly tailored it to look like a chef in a French restaurant.
I thought I looked like the comparison I've been using to people is like an extra from Dunkirk. Or someone who lied about his age to get drafted in World War II.
Interesting. I think I look more like an extra maybe from Enemy at the Gates, perhaps, or something. Like the hair has kind of gone so ragged.
Good shout.
Thank you.
are you the guy who carries the rifle or carries the ammo, though, Stag? That's the question.
Oh, definitely carrying the ammo and gets cut down. Just a forgettable character. Just one of those other ones.
Anyway, let's not get too niche here, Anthony. What's on pod today?
Yes, hello. It has been a busy week of games, but we're here, as you say, Tom, a little bit earlier in the game week than usual. So far, this double/triple game week has been kind of reminiscent, actually, of the Man City double earlier in the season, where 50-50 decisions have really hit people hard. But from an FPL perspective anyway, there's an awful lot left to unfold in this game week, and indeed this season. That said, from a consequential league placings perspective, City are now the champions. United have the top four sewn up. The top four itself, it probably should stay as it stands, bar some incredible results. And relegation has obviously been confirmed as well, with Sheffield United, Fulham and West Brom condemned. So while those things might make this season feel over in many ways, we're kind of going to lean into that a little bit and look ahead to next season and get into some forecasting, following on, I guess, to an extent from last week's discussion about the 200 club. So what we're going to be doing is looking at price predictions for next season. But yes, first up though, we're going to have a look at the game reviews so far. Of course, there's quite a few games left, but worth checking in anyway with everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all doing all right at the moment. I'm just looking at a league that I happen to know we're all in. Oh, wait a minute. Adam, I think you might be at the bottom. Sorry. Would you mind telling us how you've been getting on?
It's funny because I was just loading up live FPL on my phone to have a look. And I saw 73 and I thought, oh, that's not too bad. And then I realized that's the top 10K. My score is, in fact, 59-8, leaving me 51. Where to start? I mean, I suffered with the Maguire injury, so that went from what looked like would be at minimum a six-pointer, because I think he's played every minute in the Premier League for United up until that point. And then the injury obviously turns his potential six-pointer because of the triple game week into a one-pointer. Bruno captain, I think has worked out well, better than every other captain I could have had, because he is my highest scoring player.
Mm-hmm.
Only other returns in my side other than that are Alexander Arnold with the 7-pointer and Ian Acho on 9, thanks to last week, really. But yeah, a tale of my season. Not very good. Pretty bad. to be quite
frustrating. Honest. A very frustrating one, for sure. The Maguire thing especially has really caught an awful lot of people. And it's funny, many people have alluded to it. I'm not original in this thought, but you know, he was definitely the player that we might have thought would get the 90 minutes in three games. And that has obviously been cruelly cut apart. So that was an unfortunate one. I myself am doing a little bit better. I have 84 points minus four, so a net 80 with quite a few players left to go. So that has me on a green arrow as it stands. I have three players who have already finished all of their games for the game week. Those are Iheanacho, Kane and Son. So obviously keeping on to Son and not moving him on. I don't want to say rewarded, because it's not like 7 points is a huge haul. But at the same time, I'm happy to have him in my team, and I'm happy that I don't need to get him into my team for the next game week. So all in all, that's a happy accident. Speaking of happy accidents, Edouard Mendy in goals had that penalty save about 11 points.
Boxed that, wasn't it? Like, just literally stuck his hand out and then 11 points. Brilliant.
The finest 11 points.
It's just one of those, isn't it? The pen saves, if it does happen, is it? 8 in 10 penalties are scored, I think we said, way back in game week one. And it's just one of those examples of when it does go, you know, when it spectacularly becomes a save, like, you just get richly rewarded, don't you?
Yeah, it is kind of ridiculous. And I guess we've had, that's definitely a lightning striking moment. And I guess the Maguire season ending injury is definitely a lightning striking moment in another sense. So look, I'm happy I got the rub of the green with that this week anyway. And obviously Mendy and Rudiger, who I did play, who obviously has blanked so far, have a game to go against Arsenal. So hopefully that gives them something. I'm not too optimistic though. I have Luke Shaw, Alexander-Arnold has the 7, Jota has the 3 so far. Now, this is where the key detail for me is that I've captained Salah. I did not go with Bruno. So far, Bruno is on 11 after two games and Salah is on 6 after one game, but only playing 2. So I'm hoping for Salah to reel in Fernandez in a game against Man United. It's tough, but with Maguire injured, look, it's basically I'm hoping for Salah to score and Fernandez not to score. You know, that's effectively it's a fairly
zero-sum game now, isn't it?
It's a fairly simple scenario I'm looking for, but it's hard to know. It's just hard to know. I've got Fernandez anyway in the team. Greenwood is obviously great to have in the side. You know, I was getting a bit sour grapes earlier because I did consider captaining him and then I eventually went for Salah, but like, come on, you know, I could be getting real sour grapes about everything. Kane and Iheanacho I mentioned. So yeah, there you go. That's my 84 minus 4.
Nice one. I'm on 85. I took two free chances this week. I'm counting my lucky stars, to be honest. I had it on Maguire until Friday afternoon, probably about 4 o'clock, and then topped it to whenever I posted my team. Swapped it to Nacho then. And I mean, okay, I'm a bit disappointed with Nacho when he got a 9-pointer, but I'm much more glad about having that 9 points times two than 1 point times two. It's been okay. I bought Maguire. Basically for the same reasons that Anthony mentioned. And I didn't play Mitchell because I didn't think he'd play. That's a 6-point swing from doing that, and plus a transfer wasted, I guess. But the other transfer has been pretty good. So I did Rudiger to Maguire, and to afford that, I did Bamford out for Benteke. Now, I know I was waxing lyrical about El Ghazi last week, just being 5.2 and all, but Benteke is just 5.5. And I figured that, well, to be honest, I thought that Palace had the best double game week, which, why didn't you play Mitchell, you idiot? But Benteke, I thought, well, those two fixtures he could attack. And I noticed that he'd had he'd done decently in terms of attacking numbers over the last 6 weeks, so in last week's pod. So I kind of thought, well, you know, I'm sick of Paddy B for the time being. I'll just have a punt on this guy. And it looks like he's done all right. I think I'm going to get 15 points out of him for the double game, which is pretty damn good, to be honest, for a 5.5. Elsewhere, you know, having Greenwood's been fine, having Bruno, I hope he misses a penalty against Liverpool and gets a red card at least. But, I mean, that's by the by. It's not been the best double game week in the world thus far, but 83 with 6 players to go. Yeah, let's hope I get over the 100 mark and hope that Bruno keeps quiet. I think next week again, I'm going to hope to get a better captain because I did captain Iheanacho, and obviously 18 points is just not really what I wanted. That Newcastle game, especially the implosion for Leicester, was very, very annoying. But what can you do? Sometimes things happen in this game and you can't really anticipate them. You can't legislate for them. And that was one of them. So he's going to be sold next week. Spoiler. Right, let's move on to the main topic this week. So no market forces, a bit pointless to do, just because obviously, you know, at the moment, the game is still ongoing, and in terms of the responses to everything that happens, I'm guessing the market's holding its breath before Thursday's kind of conclusion of the double game week, triple game week, I should say. So instead, we're going to move on to price predictions. So obviously, as I said earlier on, we're recording on in a weird situation, first time this season where we've recorded without the game week being over. So in lieu of that, we thought we'd just have, you know, an open conversation following on from last week, you know, following on from that 200 club. We're not having an exhaustive look at the player list, maybe some key men, but we're going to be speculating on price changes and price predictions for next year. Obviously, I've got to put a note here, all speculation, of course. We're just indulging in a bit of navel gazing in this mid-game week pod, which will hopefully be a bit of fun, especially if you remember our guesses and comment on how we're in the slurry come next year's opening. We're not going to speculate, I don't think, too much on transfers in on this one either, because obviously we don't know and it might be a bit of a waste of air time. Let's start, I guess, in terms of with that kind of 200 club apex, which is the premium midfielders, because, well, I mean, if you look at it, as you've noted last week, three out of four of those in the 200 club are midfielders: Fernandes, Son and Salah. So Adam, I mean, how do you think they're going to be positioned next year? Is Salah still going to be top billing?
Well, it's interesting. So I think with how the season started, and I think there was a prediction amongst a lot of people, I think the three of us probably included, that there will be more penalties this season than there have been before. And I think some people were predicting Bruno Fernandes to break the 300 club, let alone the sort of 200 club. We've seen sort of his points in that respect dry up a little bit recently. I think he's going to have to be at least equal with the top price midfielder. He's certainly been the object of FOMO, I think, probably most in FPL this season. At least he has for me. Like, it's the reason I've kept him this long. It's the reason I kept him through that barren run, is that it's like, oh, well, you know, Man United could just win a penalty at any time. You never know. And you're on the end of a Bruno goal and three bonus points. So I think he's got to be top price next season.
I think he's low-key been the Salah of this year. I think maybe something we'll come back to, Anthony, in the end-of-season pod. But, you know, with that 10.5 million start-of-season price tag, he was kind of priced just a bit below, wasn't he, that sort of ultra-premium level. And with that sort of discount, I think we actually said, didn't we, at the start of this season, it was all a bit of a discount. He's really kind of exploded that. Admittedly, of course, there have been a lot of penalties, as Adam's intimated, especially at the start of the season. But nonetheless, the all-round play means that, you know, that 11.5 we've got at the moment, I think that is it going to be around that, or maybe it'll go up to sort of 12?
Yeah, actually, just when you mentioned the penalties, actually, we broke through the record number of penalties in the season actually just this game week. And I think when we were looking at forecasts earlier in the season, we thought that that could happen, you know, in the mid-game week 20. I'll make up a number, 27 or 28 or something. But the fact that it was, you know, pretty much close to the tail end of the season that I think it was 116 was broken, kind of tells you that there was a huge slowdown in the number of penalties. And of course, that did slow down Bruno. And I think Bruno in general just hasn't been as explosive in open play as he was as well. I think teams have copped on to the fact that he takes an awful lot of shots from long range and you need to close him down, you know, very urgently 30 yards out, as much as you might have to close him down if he was 8 yards out. So, yes, at the same time, I would expect Bruno to be on par with the most expensive players. Now, last season, that most expensive in terms of midfielders was Salah and Mane. They were both at 12, and then KDB and Sterling came in at 11.5. And as you say, Tom, Bruno was at a significant discount at 10.5. His price has risen to 11.5, which I think, you know, not to get into supply and demand too much, but that shows you that there is demand for him at 11.5. Yeah. And I would think that with that in mind, he will be at least 11.5, if not the full 12 next year. And that's what you're getting at, really, by comparing him to Salah as Mr. Dependable, that if anyone was to deserve that 12 mil, well, along with Salah, because at the end of the day, whilst it's been a disappointing season, he's still churning out the goals, that you think it would be those two who would be 12.
I think it would be interesting to see what they do with Fernandes, because as we noted, I think as Lucy noted last week on the pod, Salah obviously could go over the Olympics. It sounds like he really is interested in doing that. And then the AFCON. So that might mean that he is slightly out of the running next year, which may mean that Bruno kind of has a bit of a hegemony, I suppose, as a kind of the sole a premium pick in that midfield. Maybe Kevin De Bruyne will come back for another year. Maybe we'll see, Mane, as I mentioned last week, he's been a rubbish season, Sterling, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think you're right, because like you say, you list off the kind of midfielders in a similar kind of bracket at the moment. You're looking at Kevin De Bruyne, you're looking at Sterling, Aubameyang. I can't believe you forgot to mention him. They've all really disappointed. So yeah, there's not really anyone within that kind of million price point of Bruno at the moment that you can see superseding him.
Okay, we've mentioned then Aubameyang, he snuck his way in there, and he's definitely one of those falling stars that is kind of worth getting to, like these players who we don't expect to maintain the prices. I would say Mane falls into that category as well. The discussion I remember in the pre-season price reaction pod was the fact that Salah and Mane were both 12 at the same time meant that we thought that Salah had an edge over him. I don't think that there's going to be, I think that they're going to have to price Mane seriously down to account for the fact that he's had a poor season. I mean, when I say seriously down, I mean 10 million perhaps.
Ooh. Wow, I'd be really surprised and be buying him all day long if that was the case. I think
what Son was this, going into this.
I know what you mean. I think that because the fact is that Son had never had that 200 point season, whereas Mane had come off the back of two in a row. So I think that maybe they'd be regarded as slightly different by FPL, but you're completely right that Mane's had one of those seasons. And he said so himself, actually. I retweeted something today where he said, he didn't really understand why he'd had such a bad season. And the underlyings is just so good for him. He's just been on a cold streak. But yeah, 148 points this year, that's in line with, his performance 3 years ago, after two kind of great seasons at 200 plus points. But if Salah is away at the Olympics at the start of the season and Mane takes that goal-scoring burden at Liverpool, assuming neither of them leaves, I think he could be very, very interesting for the start of the season. And I guess there's also the City boys to mention as well. I mean, Sterling, De Bruyne, after last season's heroic, got the 11.5. Surely after a season comparatively in the doldrums of the two of them in the premium bracket, those are going to be players who are going to perhaps see a little bit of value next year, especially Sterling. Like, you can imagine him going down to 10.5, something like that. I couldn't see him going any further than that. I couldn't see him becoming a new Son because of what he can do. But this year has been so out of sorts that surely he is due a slight downgrade.
Yeah, I think having started at 11.5 this season, he'd been 11 in the season before that. And I think that felt realistic at the time. I think given how this season has gone for him at City, I think that 10.5 is probably the fairest. Like, I do agree with you that maybe below that is a bit too low, but any bit above that is too much. And I think KDB, kind of, you could say the same thing for them. And this kind of reflects just something that's happened with City as a whole. And it's something that you'll see in a lot of the articles that are kind of summarizing City's season now that they've been crowned champions. And it's basically that Gundogan is their top scorer with 12 goals. And that's the lowest top goals scorer that any Premier League champion has had so far. Of course, he could, score a few more, and then that record wouldn't necessarily stand, but that's where they're at right now. But I think, so I read that they have more players who've scored more than 7 or 8 goals than any champions ever.
Yeah, so, it's been so shared around. It's like Talisman Theory and the mod, really, where they're concerned, isn't it? It's very absolutely much a team effort rather than individual.
But at the same time, I think it is also a team that doesn't have a talisman on the pitch, talisman as you would know it, as it stands right now. And obviously that part of that is because they haven't had a recognised number 9 starting any games. But likewise, they haven't had someone like Raheem Sterling playing in a role that was necessarily to be the goal scorer.
Well, it's interesting because you were talking there about talisman theory being in the mud, and I guess that kind of moves on to Aubameyang quite nicely. But there was some podcast I was listening to pre-season, I can't remember which one it was, probably didn't really do much research and just saw Aubameyang's a midfielder. Yeah, he'll be amazing. He'll score the most points in the game. And
you should probably call these guys out and just tell people not to listen to them anymore.
I'd throw them in the mud, is what I'd say.
I probably unsubscribed as soon as I heard that, to be honest. But no, Aubameyang, I think, is someone that most people had high expectations for. I certainly started the season with him. I captained him for the first two games, I seem to remember. He's currently sat at, 11.3, starting the season at 12 million. And there's no way he holds that 12 million price tag at all. I would be surprised if he was more than 11.
10.5 feels about right for Aubameyang, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think the 2 million drop just feels really, really steep. I mean, if you look at the sort of raw numbers on him, he's got 10 league goals and 2 assists. That is a really, really poor return from him. But he will still be that kind of focal point of the Arsenal attack, I think. And I think that will be kind of factored into the equation when they're pricing up these players. He's still that kind of main guy. When you think of Arsenal's attack, you do tend to think of Aubameyang in terms of goal scoring.
True. 32 next year. Just funny you say, 10 goals, 2 assists. That's Suchek has 9 goals, 2 assists for context.
No, definitely. Aubameyang, I think, you're probably going the right way with him. Chelsea, I think, are a nice sort of link to the mid-tier because Pulisic and Havertz are both 8.3. And I wonder, given the fact that Havertz came, obviously, amongst a lot of fanfare, just 4 goals and 6 assists for him this year versus a very productive season with Bayer Leverkusen the year before. I wonder if we're going to look at him next year around the same price, 8.5, and think he could potentially be a bargain now he's found his feet. I'm interested in this kind of mid-price midfielder category, especially when it comes to players like Havertz, because I think that could provide us with a talisman edge at great value in terms of those sorts of players. Another one there is Mahrez at 8 million. Admittedly, he has been in and out of the team in the league in the second leg, and that brace, I think, really epitomised how Mahrez had ascended to being part of Pep's A-team this year rather than being kind of the awkward B-team player who had that huge price tag. So I think he and Havertz next year could be really, really interesting. What do you guys think about those two players and the mid-price mids in general? Adam, what do you reckon here?
I think the Mahrez shout is a really, really interesting one. It's funny, when we were talking about Mane earlier, I think they've both got the same amount of league goals, and Mahrez isn't really talked about in that kind of same kind of bracket. But I think the inevitable potential City rotation will probably be priced into him, I think, maybe when the prices come out pre-season. Something I think we quite often get caught off guard by is the kind of price increase from players who have had pretty good seasons at maybe those mid-table clubs suddenly get a hike up into this kind of 7 million, 7.5 million bracket. And I think for me, from a midfielder perspective, the big example of that was Ryan Fraser, that season at Bournemouth when him and Callum Wilson were that dynamic duo. I think he got 181 points. He got 7 goals and 14 assists.
Yeah, mental that year.
Yeah, I think he started that season at 5.5 million and the next season he was 7.5 million. So that 2 million price jump, was really, really significant. And when you think about 7.5 million for a team like Bournemouth, who I guess at the time were that sort of mid-table side, that's a lot of money. Sort of thinking about maybe Rafinha could be in that bracket next season. He's not had quite the same statistical return, but he's got that expected lively points that we all like to see. He looks so involved, so threatening. If he even stays at Leeds, that is, next season. I think 7 to 7.5 wouldn't be too unrealistic. I don't know if you guys think I'm wrong there.
No, I think I definitely agree with that. That's 7.5 is what Jack Grealish came in on this season. And I think he would have been a player who hadn't up to that point really delivered in terms of points. Obviously, this season he was fantastic, but he certainly had that expected lively, as we say, and got that 7.5 price tag, which he has met as well in kind of Fraser-esque numbers, albeit with far, far, far less minutes, that he had 6 goals and 12 assists so far this season. He might add to that if he manages to get back on the pitch in time. And so, yeah, I think that's a fair price tag to talk about. And I think the likes of James Maddison will be one that has fallen into that bracket as well in the past, who I would expect to be there as well. His teammate, Harvey Barnes, as well, would be similar. Now, that said, I'm looking at Mason Greenwood. He was in that category and he's kind of the player of choice in that category right now. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him get a wee bit of a hike further up, along with perhaps the likes of Phil Foden, who's obviously hasn't necessarily got the points in the league, but at the same time, obviously is starting to really nail his way into that first choice City 11 in a way that you wouldn't have seen before. And I'd be interested to know how high Gundogan goes as well. That they're going to have to price a rotation in for players like Gundogan, as we've said about Mahrez. But how high will he go? I'm wondering, he should probably be at that 7, 7.5 bracket as well after what we've seen.
Yeah, just I think with those sorts of players, they're in the sort of if they played every game, they would get the 9 million sort of brackets, wouldn't they? I mean, that just looks like a fair price, I think, for them, especially with Gundogan. I just feel like, obviously, this year he was a little bit underpriced. He was obviously one of those players that they looked at and thought, yeah, defensive midfielder. And to be fair, we all did as well. And I think that he's been
he's the fourth highest goal scoring midfielder this year.
I don't think anybody would have seen that one coming. I think anybody does say they saw that one coming is just BSing, frankly. So I think it'll be interesting to see how they go, and especially with those players who are, as you said, rotation hazards. I would be very surprised to see them kind of get outside the mid price mids, just because like X mins is always very, very important in terms of how you price players. And I guess before we move on to defenders, the cheapies, I want to just move on. I only want to mention a couple. The first one is Suchek, who you mentioned earlier on, Anthony. I mean, obviously he's now kind of descended into a bit of a defensive midfielder role. But I guess over the course of the season, he has shown he's got that goal scoring knack and has shown that, you know, that 5.0 initial pricing, I can't see that happening next year again, can you? I mean, at the start of the season, if you put him in and just left him there, you'd be laughing up until recently.
Yeah, he strikes me as someone who would be in at least 6 million starting next season, just on the sheer number of goals alone. I know that doesn't necessarily reflect the position that we're seeing him play now that Lingard has come into that side especially. But at the same time, they tend to be conservative with their pricing and don't want to have someone too low if they can avoid it. And maybe he was a little bit too low this year. Do you remember that poll that was going around and it was like whose fans were the most dissatisfied going into the season? And it was West Ham was the most dissatisfied fan base who thought they were going to get relegated. It was real doom and gloom.
Yeah, so I definitely think I think that kind of is likely to buoy his price.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think also in that kind of very low budget midfielder bracket, not to constantly talk about Arsenal, but that is literally all I know about. That's not even that much, to be honest. Smith Rowe is, well, what's his price now? 4.2, 4.3?
He was a 4.5er, basically, yeah.
Yeah, he was probably in the bargain basement, but he's now cemented himself as a starter for Arsenal. So I think you're looking at least sort of 5.5. I know he's not produced consistently in terms of goals and assists.
It's his first goal this weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, first Premier League goal, and he has suffered with injury this season and in the past, so his minutes haven't always been as consistent as you'd like. But, I mean, still, 5.5 for someone who you would think would be starting for Arsenal next season is pretty tempting.
Definitely one who I expect will be reclassified as a midfielder next year is Stuart Dallas. Just before we move on to the defenders, I think Dallas can't possibly stay as a defender in the game next year. Like he's made a mockery, to be perfectly honest with you, of that position. I know there was a debate for some people, not in my mind, but there was a debate for some people about whether it was Dallas or Ayling and whether he'd play in midfield and all that sort of thing.
Did you write an article on this, Anthony? I forget.
I did. And
did you?
Leeds fans were lovely and very complimentary, but we disagree about Dallas, they said. But here they are. Dallas is the Cookstown Cafu, as he's known, has carried them to glory with his 8 goals and 3 assists. So he, I don't suspect, will be a defender no more. He has the highest scoring defender right now in the game, 158 points. Now, it's been very unusual finding Dallas at the top of the defenders. Now, the defender who we would have thought would be up there in that class apart bracket is Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yes.
And I think we can continue to expect that. Now, he was obviously very highly priced at the start of the season at 7.5. But at the same time, the argument was in all of the preseason discussion was if he was a midfielder and he was 7.5, you'd totally buy him. And do you know what? I think that still will stay the same. Maybe he'll get knocked down to 7, but I don't see it getting any lower than that. In spite of everything, he's second for chances created amongst defenders in the second half of this season, just behind Luke Shaw. But I wouldn't even expect Luke Shaw to be up there with Alexander-Arnold, considering that just he has a bit more pedigree at that level and is an all-round better FPL prospect, I think, still.
Yeah, exactly. I just still think it's mind-boggling that Trent's only managed 5 assists this year. I mean, that is just one of those things that's really hard to foresee. Like, if you're able to sit there and think, you know, all right, Liverpool have won everything now. They've won the Champions League, they've won the Premier League. So clearly they're not going to be able to sustain the motivation. But there's so many levels of that 4D chessboard that I think that if you were somebody who called that, then congratulations to you. I really want to figure out your stock picks for the next 5 years. But the reality is that, as you said, the underlying is there for Trent. And just for whatever reason has happened this year, obviously there was COVID involved. It looks like he had COVID earlier on in the season, I believe. I think maybe that did have a little bit of an adverse impact. But I mean, looking at the total points this year, it really is an interesting place, that's for sure, where you've got, as you said, misnomer, misassigned defenders Stu Dallas at 5.2, followed by Wan-Bissaka, Cresswell, Ruben Diaz. Those are the top four. I mean, maybe Diaz, you'd be looking at him and thinking, okay, that kind of makes sense. You know, City's some central defender, they're always going to have that run and clean sheet throughout the season. 5.5 was pretty decent. But I think it'd be very difficult to find anybody who'd have thought that Dallas, AWB and Cresswell would be the top three. But defence has been very hard to call. So could this have an impact next year on the pricing?
I suspect that you'll still find that the pricing structure breaks down in a similar way to what we've seen in previous years. So I think we all kind of accepted that TA would be that seven. I suspect that Robbo won't keep the seven price tag and will drop down just that little bit, maybe to 6.5. I think that will kind of make for a good argument between the two. And it would also offset the fact that you'd expect so many midfielders to be in that, like, really kind of, let's say, lower elite price tag of around 10, 10.5 that we've talked about. So I think they kind of need to find to make a little bit of space somewhere. And I think the defense is where they could do that and just take things down a little bit from what you'd expect a manager putting into defense. And so TA 7, Robbo 6.5. And then I think you're looking at an awful lot of the Diaz type characters who would be at that 6 or 6.5, depending. I think 6 would be just fine, but we have seen in previous years that, you know, dependable defender, let's say a Virgil van Dijk type character in a very well set defence, you might expect to be at that price. So you obviously have the other City defenders as well, with Cancelo, Walker, Zinchenko, Stones, that you'd expect to be kind of north of 5.5, if not 6, in a kind of conservative set themselves up way. But you would also expect Chelsea to kind of have similar prices across the board, because Chelsea have actually got as many clean sheets as Man City this year. And that's actually kind of mad to think when you consider how all over the place the defence seemed at times under Frank Lampard for them to have got to that point. They've conceded 6 more goals, but they're not too far off them. And Rudiger has obviously been the really, really cheap route into that defence this season. And we've been quite fortunate in that sense with price structures and things. I wouldn't expect that to continue. And I think whatever Diaz gets, Rudiger should get as well. So that's 6, basically. But then you've got the likes of Reece James, Chilwell, even Azpilicueta as well, that you would think would be around that price. But the thing with James and Chilwell is that they do offer that little bit more going forward, especially James, if he can nail down his place. He's ridiculously productive in terms of chances created. Like, even accepting the fact that he hasn't been in the Chelsea lineup consistently at all since Christmas, he's about 10th for chances created among defenders, which I thought was quite remarkable, actually.
The really interesting thing with Chelsea defenders has been they feel like they've each had their little moment in the sun this season. Like, I think Zouma sort of back in game week 4 when he had, I think he went sort of on a really hot streak.
But that was when Nick brought him in.
It was insane. And then it sort of felt like he passed the baton on to Chilwell for a little bit as well. And Reece James has kind of popped up every now and then. And Rudiger obviously providing the value, like you say, Stag. And some idiots like me went for Azpilicueta, which has been nothing but a disaster really now towards the end of the season. But I think we've seen under Tuchel, the defence has certainly solidified from the kind of relative chaos that we saw under Frank Lampard. So I think they'll all receive a pretty hefty bump next season.
Yeah, the thing is, actually, it's, for me anyway, it's a real question whether Man United defenders are at that price as well. Because, like, they've United have been fine. Their defensive numbers are always fine. They're always, let's say, top three in terms of shots in the box and XGC and all these sorts of things. But at the same time, like, only 13 clean sheets is it's an awful lot less than you'd expect. That said, I think you always seem to find that United players tend to have, especially defenders, would tend to have a bit of a bump in price more than you might expect. And Harry Maguire is kind of the anchor to that defence. You would think will at least keep the 5.5 that he had this season. If he keeps 5.5 and it's the likes of Shaw and Wan-Bissaka who would be more likely, I think, given their attacking output, to get that 6. Wan-Bissaka is obviously up there in terms of the most points for defenders this year. Shaw has nailed his place as the season went on more and more and has been the better one in terms of underlying stats for that latter half of the season and in terms of ownership as well. So I would think that both of them have a good shout of being a six, and whichever one is the cheaper of the two is going to be the one that's in most of our teams.
I think we saw back in 2017-18, that year where Phil Jones was 4.5 and was playing, and then suddenly, you know, the United defence reached a snowball effect where there was, obviously you've got United fans who buy those defenders, plus, you know, they started keeping clean sheets. I think that's under Mourinho, wasn't it? And they got kind of five clean sheets in a row at the start of the season. You get to a point where you have to own United defence to cover yourself. This year hasn't quite happened, but I think, you know, next year, there's always going to be the fact that those defenders are going to be on the threshold. And I think, as Anthony said, they're always going to priced fairly highly. I mean, unless the likes of Twan Zabe kind of gets into the team, I suspect they're all going to be looking at, you know, a 5 or 5.5. I can't really be seeing them doing anything other than that. I think we should probably visit goalkeepers quickly. We had a couple of years, didn't we, where the premium keeper kind of came into view slightly. But you know, last year with Nick Pope, and this year with Emi Martinez and Ilan Meslier as well. We've got a question on the goalkeepers in a little bit on the question, so I'm not going to go too deeply into it. But this year, it really has been the year of the budget keeper. I mean, it would be interesting to see what they do with that, whether... I'm fairly sure, as the guys have said, that Martinez will get a hike. Will Meslier get a hike to 5.0? Probably. So we're looking at the dregs again to find that 4.5 million hero. But there's also going to be one. There'll always be kind of a player around that sort of price that allows you to just make your way upwards. And I'm yet to be convinced whether we should be paying more than 4.5 for a goalkeeper. But just looking at, finally, the players who are trying to put the ball past the goalkeeper, it is the forwards. And this year, I think, as Nick noted on the last poll, actually, it's been a tough one, because we have been looking at 3-5-2 a lot of the time. We have been kind of struggling on a lot of occasions to find a third forward. There's always been the case of, you know, you're looking at Kane and Bamford. You're looking at, you know, perhaps Vardy fitting in alongside the likes of Watkins. It's not really been the case that it's been a consistent third forward throughout the course of the season. And that's been shown within the points. Kane up there in the 200 club, and beyond that it's Bamford and Vardy, and then, you know, Calvert-Lewin and Watkins the 150s. It's not really the most fruitful source in terms of positions or points this year. I've maybe said that about defenders as well. It has been one of those years, last week's pod, where points have been a bit fell on the ground in terms of their distribution. The next year, I guess, Adam, you've got to be looking at Harry Kane and thinking that outside of any arrivals to the Premier League, perhaps a striker who isn't Harry Kane at City, surely he's going to be looking at the 12-12.5-ish. He's no longer Harry Kane number one DM, is he?
He's certainly looking like he's going to be sort of standing out there by himself in that kind of super premium, if you want to call it that, striker bracket. Looking around, kind of wondering where the likes of sort of Van Persie and Aguero from seasons past have gone. You're thinking maybe the next highest price, who are we thinking? Dominic Calvert-Lewin could get a bit of a kind of Jimenez. That was one for you there, Stag, that Z pronunciation. Like sort of price rise for DCL, maybe coming in at 8.5. Werner, obviously, not had the best season in terms of goal returns. In all competitions, he's kind of posted double figures for goals and assists. But in the Premier League, we haven't really seen him sort of show that that real finishing, or not finishing ability, because he was a bit hot and cold, the goal-scoring ability, let's say, from the Bundesliga. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a really interesting dynamic next season where we do see Kane kind of out on his own, and maybe then the next highest forward isn't, maybe we're looking at sort of 9 million for Werner. I think that'll be a fairly reasonable idea. What about you, Stag?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you that we'll see Kane standing out. I know we're avoiding going into new signings, but we will expect City to sign a new striker. And I would expect whoever that is, because it will probably be a big name, to not necessarily have the same price as Kane, who you think will be 12 or 12.5, but you would expect that City striker, if it's a player who's expected to play week in, week out, to be at least 11.5, but that's hypothetical and I'll move away from that. If Rashford was reclassified, I think likewise he'd be around that price. Or if Greenwood was reclassified, give him a good font upwards. Cavani is obviously stayed, but I think they'll price in the fact that they wouldn't expect him to play too consistently, and that 8-ish price would be fair for him. And that 8-ish price is, I think, where we're going to see quite a few players next season. Werner, I don't think I'll see him going down at all anywhere near that. Yeah, I'd say he'd be a 10-ish, whatever Vardy was at the start of this season, I think was 10 as well. I suspect that'll be fair for him. But that 8-ish million is kind of where they put an awful lot of the mid-table team strikers who've proved themselves to some extent. So like what Danny Ings and Raul Jimenez were this year, you'd expect to find the likes of DCL and Bamford next season. I think Lacazette will keep around that price as well, because in spite of everything, he's still managed to pick up a few goals. Richarlison, likewise, you could kind of say the same for. And even Mikel Antonio would be in and around that bracket as far as I'm concerned. And then you will find a fall off to where you find the kind of the other characters who'll be at 6.5-ish. And that's kind of really the Watkins, Wilson, Wood, Adams zone. You know, players, the Mopay even, that these are players that you expect to sometimes do well.
The Watkins zone, that just feels rife with disappointment and talentlessness, doesn't it, really?
I think what it is about those is that their time comes and their time goes. There's a 5-week period where you're like, oh, fixtures are great, better get Adams, and then, oh, the Chris Wood time has arrived.
The overall trend over the last few years is that the investment in terms of your team has receded over the course of the last few years. So I remember back in 2014, 2015, you'd be throwing everything into your forwards, and you'd have your Lukaku, your Kane, your Kun Aguero, your Van Persie, even further back than that. Everything was on the strikers. And over the last few years, everything has kind of been steadily moving backwards, where you've had your midfielders, especially. I mean, the midfielders where you can put the majority of your budget these days. And the defence has received a sort of higher form of recognition, I think, than ever before, in terms of, you know, big at the back, Nick's pet theory, and so on and so forth. And the forwards really have fallen off, haven't they? If the same players are going to be looking around a 9-ish sort of mark. I mean, if it is Kane, he's basically standing out on his own, it being around kind of 11.5, it's really interesting to think about the structure of pricing just in general. Because if the forwards are sort of a mishmash around sort of the 8-9 sort of point, then basically you're kind of corralled perhaps into thinking, okay, I'm going to have a Kane at 11-ish, probably a Pookie. All right, he's coming up again. Probably going to be a 6.5, let's face it. And then you're kind of thinking, does the whole game lend itself to a 3-5-2 now? Is that the new vogue, Anthony, with how everything is kind of looking?
Yeah, but I do feel like a very odd set of circumstances has kind of occurred to all of the players, or all of the forwards who started this season at 9.0 and upwards. So Martial has really fallen off. Firmino has been more disappointing than ever. Jesus hasn't delivered as expected. Werner, ditto. Aguero hasn't played. And then you've got Vardy and Kane. So like there is going to be, let's say they'll have 5 or 6 players in that 9+ category. And I suspect that we won't have them disappoint like they have this year again. Just law of averages would dictate that there's going to be more demand for those 9.0, 9.5 forwards again, that they will start scoring. Because it has been very odd to see the way
they've had their time in the sun, as Adam said. I suspect it's going to be sustainable in some ways. I mean, obviously Kane has had a comeback year, as you said last week. It's just whether there's going to be a point where you're going to be looking at 3 forwards, given the fact there's always going to, I feel like it's an embarrassment of riches in the midfield. That's what kind of makes me think, really?
Yeah, like I think things have been pushed towards the 3-5-2 or even a 4-5-1 sometimes in the last few years, with there being kind of so many, a few top defences that were kind of churning out the clean sheets that might even tempt you into a double up. And City, I think likewise, you could say that for again, because the fact of the matter was there was so much rotation always going on with their City attackers that the double up at the back was safer to just try and deliver the points each week. So with that in mind, even 4-5-1 could be a thing, the 3-5-2. But I do agree that you'll be hard pressed to find, but it always happens, doesn't it, that we always have people starting the season, the traditionalists start with their power 7 players and basically set themselves up to pivot off one of those strikers who inevitably disappoints in the first few game weeks of the season.
Well, I think that's right. I think it does just make me think of some of those strikers that we've been talking about, Bamford and Watkins. They've both come up from the Championship. And I don't think it would be too surprising if, like I was talking about the parallel to Rafinha and Fraser earlier, if Bamford in particular got a kind of Wilson-esque price rise. He's got 15 goals, 10 assists this season, which I don't think anyone was expecting going into it. So I can imagine him getting up to sort of 7 million. I don't know if that would be, I don't think that's too high.
For Bamford, you mean? The fact that Ings started this season at 8.5, that seems to be the type of price range that you'd expect to find a forward who can get, let's say, well into the double figures for goals and near double figures for assists from a mid-table team. And so 8.5 would be where I would think that you'll find Bamford personally. Below that seems a little bit risky, given that put Raul Jimenez in that category as well. That said, I feel like Bamford has really stuck out. You know, he is the one that we thought could make the 200 club out of the strikers that we saw. And that Leeds team kind of was set up for it. The other strikers who have maybe got similar amounts of goals as him, but not necessarily the same amount of FPL points, so the likes of Watkins, I wouldn't see them getting that high. I think he could be 7.5 at most.
Yeah, they don't tend to put talentless players that kind of high normally, do they?
I do think, though, if Watkins does get a fairly kind price tag next year, he could be really interesting, just because, I mean, it is rare, isn't it, that a striker comes up completely new from the Championship as well, and he gets over 150 points, 13 goals and 8 assists this season. And if you think about how unlucky he's been over the course of the year, the amount of crossbars, the amount of disallowed goals, the amount of X, Y and Z, meaning he's had returns ruled out, I think Watkins could definitely be an interesting player ahead of next year. I think he's one of those who's a bit underrated, especially if Grealish, who we didn't quite mention in the midfielders, does come back and is at Villa next year. I think if those two are together from the start of the year, he could be really, really interesting. And there's quite a few players we haven't mentioned, and we're not going to in the interest of time, likes of Wood and the likes of Antonio, the likes maybe even of Adam Hopcroft's best mate, Wesley. But suffice to say, it's always going to be the case that we're looking at the upper end of the strikers. I think that the lower end of the strikers, unless you get lucky with a promoted forwards who is given a 5.5, likes of Bamford next year, it's unlikely that there's going to be somebody who is... but yeah, there's slightly esoteric chat there around certain players and price tags around certain positions. One of those that obviously is speculative, but hopefully fairly interesting just to listen to and follow. We're about to answer listener questions after this.
Who got the assist?
So we're back and it's time to look at the questions this week. Obviously only a few because we're mid-game week. The first one is on the beach. So Andy Penman asks, what on the beach updates there are now with teams in the lower and middle reaches, particularly with all three relegation spots locked in. I mean, Anthony, what do you think the on the beach impact is going to be going forward? Are we going to be able to focus on these themes, or is it going to be a case of, you know, teams still playing, teams still kind of having some personal motivation despite the fact they are safe in the Premier League?
So I think on the beach as a whole, I think it's very much still a thing. I think you can say for the three condemned teams at this point, I think their form has been quite poor. Even West Brom, who kind of seem to be putting together some bit of a spirited attempt to try and stay up, that's obviously fallen off. But at the same time, within that West Brom team, you can see a player who has that personal motivation in Pereira. And I think likewise, it seems in the Southampton game, and I've only just caught a little few highlights, that Danny Ings is a player who you could say something similar for. And I think there is a spot on that plane slash boat slash bus to the Euros for him if he plays his way into that squad in the final few games of the season. So he's the type of player who you could still be targeting in spite of the fact that his team, I would still say, are on the beach. The fact that they beat Crystal Palace, a team who were also very much on the beach, like they now have, is it 4 defeats in 5 or 3 defeats in 4. So that'll tell you kind of where they're at too. So the fact that Danny Ings starred in basically a beach volleyball game against Crystal Palace wouldn't necessarily get you too excited. There are a few other sides who I would say are on the beach. Burnley definitely have slowed down. And I think that they're just not a team you target though. Like they don't tend to get whacked by anybody except for City. And that's a bit of a problem for them. And I would be very interested to see what happens with Everton and even with Spurs, who have slowed down a little bit. Arsenal as well. You just don't know at this point how a lot of those teams are going to play against other teams who have nothing to play for. It's very unusual that we get to a point in the season where so many teams have nothing to play for, that everything is so sewn up. Even the Europa League places seem relatively sewn up at this point, if you were just to kind of extrapolate form just a small bit. So really kind of comes down to personal judgment. And I think it's class that will show through at this point, not necessarily form. Which means, yeah, something like Talisman Theory, which would say picking the likes of Pereira and Ings would be a good strategy, kind of basically fits quite nicely in. And that's what I'd be looking at in those final few games for teams who have nothing to play for, but playing teams who also have nothing to play for with players who are actually good.
Yeah, I think I sometimes find the problem with the teams on the beach is they flip-flop quite a lot in terms of form. So yep. Like you have a team like Newcastle, for example, who put in such a listless display against Arsenal and then suddenly turn up the next week. And obviously with Newcastle, their example, they're crying, Wilson, because obviously now he's injured. So you've got to look at someone else in that side. Perhaps Joe Willock, who sort of showed up with a few goals since he joined them on loan, could be an option maybe after this City game.
Yeah, I think you're definitely seeing that there are just a few guys who seem to be reliably returning. But at the same time, I think you'd be better off just trying to look at the better teams at this point, who are playing teams who are on the beach, if you can, rather than trying to get at that flip-flop, as you say, Adam, because it is very hard to predict. Like Newcastle's form is a classic case in point of that, but so is Southampton's, to be perfectly honest with you as well, that they've had an awful lot of bad games and then, you know, a good spirited victory, haven't had a good spirited draw with Leicester, or win against, was it a win, draw against Leicester just a few games ago as well.
Is it the case then that you look at basically, as you said, the Talisman Theory and also the target operation target X as being a viable way going forward? So, you know, for example, next game week, there are a couple of games on the roster that people have been mooting are worth looking at. I know it's blank game week, but Sheffield United away against Everton, that could be one. So Dominic Calvert-Lewin could be in people's minds. Luca Dean, who we didn't mention earlier on, of course, be in people's minds. And obviously, Sheffield, obviously West Brom as well, are at home to Liverpool. So there could be the case that the herd captaincy could be on Salah. But there's obviously the likes of Trent there. There's obviously the likes of Coltrane Mane there. And also the likes of the most annoying player in the Premier League to own at the moment in fantasy football, Diogo Jota, also there against West Brom. I mean, could it be a case, Adam, of just kind of focusing on these players who are playing against teams who are so condemned, targeting them and hoping that, you're able to be on the right side of a rampant performance?
Yeah, I think so. I think even watching the Arsenal game against West Brom, they put up a sort of relatively spirited performance for a bit, but Sam Allardyce sat on the bench. It looked like he couldn't give less of a crap if he tried. I mean, so I think they're definitely a side I'd be looking at. And
Umbrella up, Hello Magazine, very much across the eyes, sunglasses on over those eyes as well, taking in the rays, that type of position.
Yeah, he looks like he sticks a whole pack of chewing gum in his mouth before every single game. And his only goal for that match is to work his way through it until the minty flavour is completely eradicated. But so definitely West Brom and Sheffield United, I think are sides that we should be looking at targeting.
Yeah, like if you look at the form table, last six games form table, Fulham are the worst. They've 1 point in the last six. Like, it's dreadful. In terms of goal conceded, though, yeah, the other sides are up there with them. Basically, there's quite a few teams who've conceded 11 or 12 or 10 goals in recent weeks, but Fulham are the ones who are dependably doing it and managing to lose themselves games, which is why I think that you could throw Danny Ings into the equation for players that you might be looking at for this week, with Southampton at home to that Fulham side.
I definitely agree with that. I think the one that I'm looking at, obviously, is Calvert-Lewin. We've said it a few times this year, is that Ings, from the 6.0 mark up to the 8.5, did make him a really kind of awkward fix around that sort of point. And I'm definitely seeing that now, that I'd love to get Danny Ings in, especially after tonight's performance. But it looks like Calvert-Lewin's going to have to be the one against Sheffield United to hopefully do a similar job. But nonetheless, it does sound like there's a definite impact in terms of on the beach. It's just how that's going to impact the other teams. So, you know, as I said earlier on, people looking at Southampton thinking, oh, these guys got the bucket and spades out. But they have managed to kind of score three goals against Crystal Palace. Danny Ings has gotten a 13-point haul.
They won a sandcastle competition.
Yeah, yeah. And as you said earlier on, it's going to be the case that maybe we're going to home in on the talisman sort of element of things to get things going. And there's obviously going to be those individual motivations as well. So the likes of Lingard, who I did write off last week, so the streak was over. And then as soon as the triple game week kind of news came out, he did stay in my team. So now I'm flipping that narrative, Adam and Anthony. I'm saying that Lingard's going to be playing for his future and playing for a move ahead of next year. So, yeah, his streak may be over. He may have got another blank. But ahead of Brighton, West Brom and Southampton over the last three, I'm thinking, you know what? Because he happens to be in my team, he's going to be thinking to himself, yeah. You know, if I do well over the last three games, I'm going to be A, in the England team, and B, looking at either a good move or a good position back at Manchester United. So it depends on the narrative you're telling yourself, doesn't it?
If you lived in a less ideal world, Tom, and you weren't so fortunate to have Jesse Lingard in your team and you were just sitting there with no West Ham players right now, would you be like, I think I'd rather get Mikel Antonio in?
I would. I definitely would. But because I probably am not going to be getting Mikel Antonio in for a couple of weeks, I'm going to be telling myself that his hamstrings are as terrible as Callum Wilson's is. So I'm going to be avoiding him for the time being. But I may well be buying in Vladimir Šufal or Michael Dawson, Craig Dawson. Same person. It really depends on kind of how you want to frame it now. I think a lot of the time it is down to sort of the way in which you weave the narratives that make sense for you. Interesting way of looking on the beach from this point onwards.
And you mentioned Mikel Antonio's injuries and stuff, and I think that brings us on to our next question, because a lot of people had brought in Maguire, that included you, Tom, and were instantly rewarded for that with his injury. People thought that he'd play every game, of course. It didn't happen. And there was some guy who didn't realise he was going to be on a podcast called Adam Pritchard, who asked whether there were any defenders worth bringing in to replace the aforementioned Harry Maguire ahead of the run-in. And so, Adam Pritchard, what do you think in answer to Adam Pritchard's question?
Yeah, it's all right, guys. I'll take this one. You sort of take five. I've got this covered.
I think there's going to be a first, hasn't it? Where some guy who's asked a question ends up on the podcast answering his own question. That's going to be a landmark.
Right. Genuinely, though, please help me. Seriously. I've got no idea what to do.
Okay, I'll bring you along for a second here. And I had put together a small bit of thought on that question. When I saw Adam Pritchard asking a question, I thought, my God, I need to help this man. Didn't think I'd be talking to him. So, first of all, I think what you need to look at is see where Liverpool's heads are at. And fortunately, you have another game in this game week to figure out where Liverpool are at with such a good run of fixtures ahead. West Brom, Burnley, Crystal Palace. Doubling up on that Liverpool defence might not necessarily be a bad idea, presuming you have Trent like the rest of us. I personally am keen on Everton, but at the same time, if you look at clean sheets in the last 10-ish game weeks, I think they are second or third. They have like six, which is actually quite good and more than you'd actually expect them to have. City are obviously the obvious team with an obvious upside, but the problem is like you just don't know who's going to play. City have the Champions League final to be getting concerned about, so you just don't know who's going to be staying in that side. And so with that in mind, but Leeds, they have the fixtures, don't they? Dallas is the best, but you've got Llorente as well there in a much kind of cheaper way. Those Leeds fixtures, Burnley away, Southampton away, and West Brom at home, I think all pretty plumb. And of course, like that's definitely one team on the beach versus the other teams on the beach. But, you know, the man bun lads are usually the guys who are winning the games of beach volleyball. And I suspect that, that might be the case in those final game weeks of the season as well. And West Ham, I would say I would throw Šufal into the agenda. I think he's found his way out of an awful lot of teams. Rightly so, because the fixtures are turned against them. Šufal managed to keep going and picked up quite a few assists, even though West Ham themselves were conceding goals in most of their games. But with Brighton away, West Brom away and Southampton at home, I think there's a few options there that would save you a bit of coin as well to invest elsewhere with the blank.
Yeah, I mean, I've got two players to get rid of, Maguire and Castagne next week, in order to fund Calvert-Lewin. Yes, I'm taking a minus eight, spoilers again, but I completely am behind what Anthony has said. I'm definitely looking at Dallas just coming in, just as a no-brainer, really, to enjoy his out-positionness over the last three game weeks. I mean, he, over the last six games, has been the second highest scoring player with 36 points in defence. And Leeds is, you know, last three games in terms of the run-in. There's nothing to really fear about that. It's Burnley away, Southampton away, and West Brom at home. Fantastic beach volleyball players, players that I'll be looking to buy, that's for sure. And Shufal with a C, that is the other one that I'm looking to bring in as well. So he's got four assists over the last six, top for defenders. And I think that he, in of himself, is one of those players who really benefits when West Ham do have a fixture which sees them on the defensive, sees them playing the counter-attacking game. He's got that fantastic engine, actually, if you watch him play. He's very, I think he's one of those players that, for whatever reason, maybe it's because West Ham got that kind of Czechia tip-off from Suchek, perhaps has hit the top level a bit late in his career. He is fairly old. And if you watch him, in terms of how old he looks, my God, he looks like he's 35. It's like the kind of guy buying kebab off about 2 a.m. in the morning, doesn't he? But Brighton away, West Brom away, and Southampton at home. I think that those are three games that West Ham are really going to benefit from, especially there's two games in there where they're going to be playing on the counter, Brighton and West Brom. And I think that he could be a very, very good asset to sign. Those are two, but if there is any price rise action, old Craig Dawson, I think, probably be the one that I bring in otherwise. End of last season and throughout seasons in the past as well, a really fantastic record in terms of getting the end of any set piece. I think there was a point in the season, maybe around game 20 or so, when he and Suchek were kind of getting each other's way in terms of trying to get on the end of those Bowen and Crespo peaches into the box. So he could be one who's really interesting, especially with Brighton having no dunk to try to defend against him. And so those would be players that I'd be looking at.
Call this very, very spurious.
It's very spurious, Anthony.
No,
go
but
away.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. So this is a very spurious theory that I'm going to suggest here, but I do think that a player like him, who'd be quite good on corners, might get that little bit more space when defenders are just that little bit more switched off and they're on the beach and they're thinking of that trip to Dubai after they've got two COVID tests clear to go on their trip. And I think that's where someone like him could actually pick up a goal in these final few weeks of the season.
Yeah,
where
exactly.
It was harder to get in those earlier weeks when people were a bit more tuned in.
Exactly. And proud Irishman Declan Rice could well be back for the last few games of the season.
Thanks very much, Tom. I'll see you later.
Right. Next thing is keeper concern. So there have been a few kind of conversations about goalkeepers flying around. I think people who are facing up to having no goalkeeper in the blank game week of 36, especially, are asking these sorts of questions. So Ashe Mefa and Osmo FPL, a good friend of the pod, are looking at goalkeepers. The former is looking at Melier as an obvious pick, and Osmo is looking to get rid of Schmeichel and is looking at Pickford. But both of them come with interesting double ups. So Ashe says, you know, Melier, he's going to have to get him, and also Dallas, so she'd be looking at that. And Osmo is looking at Pickford and also Luca Dean. So could we trust that double up to come? I think personally, you know, Pickford and Dean against Sheffield United, maybe with like Torval and Dean against the ice, I think that would be well worth looking into. But I mean, what do you guys think? I mean, Adam, goalkeeper wise, it's not the sexiest of questions, obviously.
Yeah, I think Pickford is an interesting one. I think actually his form, sort of from an eye test perspective, has improved recently. But the problem with Jordan is you never know when it's going to go tits up, because he is prone to a sort of handling error anytime anything.
Oh, that's a very, very niche British reference. That lost on Anthony completely. He's not up to that.
Is this something from Ben, the Spice Girls era? That should be before your time.
It's a glamour model reference, that one, Anthony. No.
Just do some
Googling afterwards. You'll enjoy it.
I think if you're going to look at anyone from the Everton defence, it's definitely Digne is the way to go. He's been keeping that sort of back line afloat this season. I've got Holgate at the moment. I'm not really too happy with him, but it looked like Mina picked up an injury. Not really sure how long he's going to be out for, so I guess I'm kind of stuck with him for now. Other than that, the goalkeeper spot has been a bit of an issue. I think Ashai said that Meslier is the obvious pick, and is he the obvious pick for a reason? Because he's the best option to go for. I think if you've not already got Dallas, maybe he's the easiest route to go to.
Yeah, I think I'd be behind that, with Meslier being probably the best option of those cheap goalkeepers. At the same time, like, you could go for Sanchez as well at the same price and then try and get one of the other Leeds defenders into your actual defence. And that probably will be a better balance, because they just seem to have that little bit more going forward. I wouldn't be interested in Pickford personally, but even though that Everton defence has been okay. So let's say the last 11 games, they're second in terms of clean sheets with 6, which is actually quite good, in fairness. You wouldn't actually expect that from Everton ever. So that's promising, but I just can't get excited about it. And so I'd have just gone for Meslier, or even for the Sanchez of that matter, and just moved on. That said, though, I think people just need to be aware that Forster has played the last 2 games. There would have been a lot of people who would have thought they weren't going to have a goalkeeper, and now they suddenly have a goalkeeper again. So maybe just check your team to make sure, just to see which Southampton goalkeeper you forgot you own as your second goalkeeper, because you might not even need to make a defensive transfer, as mad as it might sound.
Yeah, it's just one of those kind of places, isn't it, where if you're looking at goalkeepers, then you're probably doing okay in terms of everything else. So you've kind of misfired here in terms of the blank. Right, let's move on to the next question, which is Spurs goggles. So our little Jason has his free hit left and he's considering triple Spurs, Son, Kane and Bale for his free 36 use here. Very jealous of having the free hit still available. Wow, well done. I guess this sort of leads to a wider question, though, which is, are Spurs still high enough in our estimations to back what little Jason is doing in terms of owning those free? Just because I think that ahead of the run-in, maybe you're looking at Spurs. I certainly was. I'd be thinking, you know, Wolves, Aston Villa and Leicester over the last 3, especially, you know, Kane loves Leicester on the last day, doesn't he? Or just loves Leicester in general. I think he scored more goals against them than any other team. Would you be looking at those games and thinking, oh, that's a great Bale game. Well, that's a great Song game. Oh, they've been doing okay. Are they still high in their estimations in terms of teams to be targeting to bring in? Or should we be looking elsewhere, Adam? Are those players, I guess, if Kane's owned by everybody, are Son and Bale still the players we should be targeting?
Well, I mean, I think the only reason Ryan Mason's actually been given the temporary job is to try and boost sales of Spurs' gilets. I think they kind of went downhill ever since Tim Sherwood left. So clearly they've got a backlog of those in the club shops and need to get them off the shelves. I'll be honest, I'm a little bit sceptical on the, especially after that Leeds performance, the continual hype might be a bit over-egging the pudding around Bale, but people were still looking at bringing him in. I think what we've seen is he's just not a particularly reliable performer on the pitch. He's a defensive liability, really. I thought he was really, really quite poor against Leeds. And I think at this point, is it too harsh on him to say that his mind is already on the Euros, maybe trying to sort of keep his legs ticking over? We know how central he is to everything that Wales do. And he said it himself, he's not going to be at Spurs next season. I don't think they're going to
he expects to be back at Real Madrid, isn't he? So it feels like a bit of a kind of a sentimental sort of return before he gets back to his real life.
No, yeah, definitely. I think everyone has Kane, so I don't really think there's any question about holding him. I guess maybe if you've got a sort of spare free transfer that you want to use up and you're thinking, well, I could probably do without Bruno, or certainly I might not captain him from now until the end of the season, then I guess maybe Son is the best option, but I certainly wouldn't be looking at Bale. I'm not sure what you guys think.
So I just had a kind of a bit of a think there about who would be your free hit midfield if you were putting it together right now. There's no way you're going to do it without Son, and there's no way you're going to do it without Salah. I feel like that's two kind of acceptable things to say. Then it gets, you know, I think you're going to want to trip or to double up on the big two Liverpool names just because you can, and you throw in Mane into that as well. You've got two slots left. I personally would roll the dice on two City midfielders and hope that one plays, and I'd go for like Foden and Mahrez or something ahead of getting in somebody like Bale, purely because I feel like that roll of the dice is just probably a bit more favourable than Spurs against Wolves, who haven't been good by any means, but at the same time haven't been porous either. And it's not like that Spurs team under Mason have really changed into some sort of like holy attacking unit that excites everybody at all, really. And that Leeds loss especially was a real kick to the guts for them. Now, they do have 5 wins in their last 6 at home, and all of Bale's goals have come at home in 2021. But at the same time, is that enough for you to be swung by it? I just feel like it's a bad use of the free hit, personally. I know you'll say that, like, when else are you going to get Bale but on a free hit? And that's fair enough. I did it earlier in the season. But I think, personally, I'd try and play the risky game you can play with the City midfielders with a really high benefit to be able to be got from those City players if they play and if they do well. I think it's just more likely to get you 12 points than Bale.
I'd also sooner look at someone like Sigurdsson if we're sort of thinking of targeting Sheffield United.
What a hero. 6.9 million as well. Beautiful.
Exactly, the sexiest price there is. but if we're looking at targeting Sheffield United, I think Sigurdsson's certainly the standout from those Everton midfielders. So, or maybe we could go for Tom's best mate El Ghazi, you know, away against Crystal.
I mean, that was one that I did back, but then I reversed back from. I took a U-turn and thought, you know what, Benteke is my man, and you know, hindsight is a fantastic judge. And hindsight has judged me worthy. Shame about my captain pick, right? The final thing is late season hits. So Karim Tai is a friend of the pod, gets in touch to ask, how about taking hits at this point in the season, with every point being incredibly crucial now? He laughs at the fact I'm looking at taking -8 this game week. And he says, is there any point in doing so with less time to make up those hits? Or, as I'm kind of trying to push in his direction, is it worth going for broke? And is it a different case in the upcoming week, which is a blank game week, of course, if you're hitting out a blanking player for -2? So strategically, I suppose, Anthony, you know, it could be quite good to be getting rid of these sort of blanking individuals, the likes of Iheanacho, who I'm looking to get rid of, because, you know, they've got a blank, and then Chelsea and Spurs, and obviously, you know, with Maguire, it's probably a bit of a no-brainer. But what's your view on hits at this point in the season? Are you trying to just make sure that your deposit in terms of the points that you've got is just kind of not impinged by the hits you're taking? Or is it the case that you are interested in kind of taking hits, try to get as high as you can now?
So like all these things, I think there's an element that you're, how your team is and what rank you're at will define how you want to approach this. But I also think how much you care about what your overall rank was in previous seasons was up to now will matter too. Like if you're someone who's like thinks it's going to be a complete and utter disaster to have a rank, let's say 100k less than what you have right now, you wouldn't be taking risks and you might not be taking loads of hits. But at the same time, I think if you're chasing points or if you just want to just max out your chances of getting a higher overall rank than where you are rather than just consolidate whatever you're at, I think it totally makes sense to take hits, especially for a blank. If it wasn't a blank, I'm not sure I'd be saying the same thing to the same extent. But when it's a blank, especially, you can knock out those blanking players. And as you say, Tom, dilute basically that -4 to at least a -3 or a -2 with appearance points. That seems like a pretty good deal to me. And you can set yourself up nicely for the final 3 games as well. Just the amount of, especially budget players who have pretty good run-ins. I think Leeds are the standout in that, but West Ham, you could say the same for. It means that if you are taking hits, that second player you're bringing in to enable the move that I presume you really want to make, they're pretty good and they will stick in your side for 3 game weeks. So it's particularly handy that it doesn't feel like the hit is concentrated in one blank game week and nothing else, that it will continue to benefit you going on. So with that in mind, I would say, Karam, take the hits, go for it. And I can totally see why someone like Tom is taking a minus eight just to, you know, hope for the best and have another 90th-ish minute goal go his way with a player he's brought in.
I think what you say there, Anthony, is so true about kind of your perspective on your overall rank. Because at this point, my rank in, I think it was game week 27, I was around 180k. I'm now 460k. If I finish 600k, I really don't care that much. It doesn't make that much difference. Those, whatever happens now, unless I manage to sort of claw back some ground on where I was 10 game weeks ago, I'm going to look at it as a bad season. And I'm probably going to try and write it off and start afresh next season as much as possible. So I think from someone in my position who's looking at where they are now as pretty bad, an extra 100K like on my rank is not going to make too much difference to me emotionally. So yeah, why not sort of take some hits, try and have a bit more fun with it, try and pick some players you've never owned before, or be a bit riskier with some of your picks from now until the end of the season.
For me, I think it's actually not too exciting. It is basically moving on to transfers and captains as well, segueing that very, very sweetly. It's going to be removing Iheanacho, Castagna and Maguire, and also buying Dominic Calvert-Lewin, captaining him, removing Castagna for Shufal, and also removing Maguire for Dallas. And those are three players who hopefully over the last three have good games and are going to do a job for me effectively over those good games. And and just kind of keying into what Karam asked about hissing out a blanking player, I've got no compulsions about doing that, because the three players that I'm removing, there's no threat. They're all going to get zero. So it does feel like a minus two. It feels like a minus six in general. So I think I'm probably going to be okay in terms of making that removal. But you could say that I'm just kind of, as Adam has kind of intimated, trying to make the best of a bad situation, which I probably am, to be honest. I think if you are in a situation where you're probably okay, you know, you're looking to consolidate your rank rather than attack your rank, I'd probably be avoiding hits a little bit. I'd probably be kind of sitting there and thinking, yeah, every point is crucial. I wouldn't be too upset about fielding 10 men, 9 men probably in game week 36, that blank, just because at the end of the day, there's going to be people around it taking those hits to try to kind of find their way into a better position than you are. Or at least to get to the position where you are already. And so that's a very good position to be in. And for me, it probably wouldn't be something that I'd be too worried about in terms of having a few players less, because you're kind of safe in the knowledge that everybody around you is going to be taking hits to get to, you know, 10 players, 7 players. A bit of a shame that we are here in terms of my rank, in terms of Adam's rank, but I think it probably does make sense in terms of what we're doing. Anthony, let's move on to transfers and captains then. I've just expressed my transfers and captains. I'm probably going to be captaining Dominic Calvert-Lewin if I bring him in, as I'm kind of vaguely kind of mentioned earlier on in terms of Sheffield United. I'm going to be targeting them, so he looks like a very, very good transfer and a captain as well. What are you looking at doing this week?
Right, so in my current stance, I just don't have enough players. That's my biggest problem. I have 8 players, and that's including Keenan Davis, who, thanks to Watkins's red card, is likely to start, which I was delighted about. And Mitchell, who seems to have won his spot in the side. I hadn't expected to be in as good a position as having seemingly 8 players going into this week. So I will be looking to basically bring that, I think, to 10, maybe 11 players, but that would mean taking a minus 8, and that seems like mad to do. And I think basically how well the rest of this game week goes will kind of decide whether I go for a minus 4 or a minus 8. Regardless, I'll make one defensive transfer. I suspect it'll be transferring out Luke Shaw purely because he can free up budget for me. And I also feel like he might not necessarily play that game against Fulham in game week 37, which would be the game that you'd be keeping a United player for anyway, considering he has a ready-made replacement on the bench at all times at United in Telles. So with that in mind, I'll probably sell him for someone, and I haven't decided yet who, but I'm feeling Leeds basically, and you've heard me mention Leeds throughout this pod. And then Iheanacho is going to move as well. I'd love to get Ings. If I was doing the minus eight, it would be Ings who comes in. If I'm just doing the minus four, then I'll be rectifying the fact that I have no West Ham attacker, and it'll actually be Mikel Antonio who's coming in, considering his form has been pretty good, and he seems to be the likely man in that team again. That said, I'm kind of tempted by a few of the other strikers as well. Even Paddy Bamford, to be honest, or Chris Wood. Like, it's that whole entire kind of basket of 6 to 6.5s. Like, a lot of them have good fixtures. If I'm stretching up as high as DCL is, I'll go all the way to Ings, though. I'm just more excited by his potential. I feel like he has a higher ceiling overall as well. And sorry, in terms of captaincy as well, before I move on to Adam, I'll probably just captain Salah, unless he has a particularly bad game against Manchester United in the final game week of this. It just feels like the safer option to do. Although I'd be tempted by the fact that I have two Spurs players in Son and Kane. Again, I just can't get too confident about Spurs, can I? Adam?
Well, now my Maguire transfer is completely sorted out to the excellent answering of my question earlier. Actually, ironically, I think I'll probably keep Maguire this week.
For God's sake.
Well, I don't know if he's completely crocked and ruled out 100% until the end of the season.
It seems the reports were saying hopeful that he'll be back for the Europa League.
Yeah, it's a case of maybe if Veltman, see, it was a surprise injury that I wasn't really expecting. If he looks like he might be back for next week, I think I might just make a minus four transfer. I'm also looking at DCL for Iheanacho. That seems like a fairly common move this week. And then I've had Maddison stinking up my team for a while now, and he's one I'm very, very keen on getting rid of. So it will be a case of, if I just decide to take a minus four, I'd get Iheanacho and Maddison out of my side, likely for Rafinha and DCL. If I decide to take a minus eight and get rid of Maguire as well, I'd probably look for something a little more punty in that midfield spot. I was thinking of Willock earlier. I know he's got that Man City game this weekend, but Newcastle's running is relatively decent, and he's a player I would be able to bench this next week if Veltman is fit. So he's someone I'm kind of eyeing up. I'm basically looking at that midfield spot to have a bit of fun with. You know, I want to add some spice to my life. But, Gary Halliwell.
I feel like Willock. I just feel like Willock is such a propaganda sort of pick, but I really like it. That's really, really good. No, round it up, doesn't it, Anthony, on the Joe Willock pick?
Yes, it absolutely does. So we were Who Got the Assist. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you have not already. The correspondence section will return in the next podcast, whogottheassist@gmail.com, for your emails, your thoughts, your comments, your addendums, your whatever it might be. And thanks very much to Adam, who is @35who, all one word, on Twitter, for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me on, guys. This is definitely in the top three fantasy football podcasts I've ever been on.
Have you been on last twice, haven't you? So, yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, thanks for coming on anyway. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the rest of the triple game week, no matter how that works out for you. We'll be back next Sunday because of how things unfortunately work out. But either way, hope you have a good weekend, and we'll speak to you very, very soon.
Ciao.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Podcast Network.